Real Poets is an audio-only podcast that can also be visually read, like roses. Or when a director juxtaposes his or her most imposing reposes with characters, settings, and themes, composed of thrilling soundscapes, highest of stakes, and dreams. Hosted by a duo of real poets about real poets and the real poetry they've written and the films that have been written about them and their work.
Join us each week as we talk to another real poet with something to say and how a real poetry movie influenced them in some way. Then we each write a new poem inspired by our most recent viewing of the film and share it with all of you. The Refrain.
And Refrain. We are going to reframe the main frame in The Refrain.
If you had to start your own Dead Poets Society, which three poets, present company excluded, dead or living, would be in your Dead Poets Society? So who's your meeks, bro? Who's your meeks?
Okay, wait, no. They are attending this poetry, or we're using the work of them?
No, they're there. They're part of the society. Okay. They're somebody you can talk to. They're somebody you can interact with, and they are peers, right? They're poets, yes, but they are part of your Dead Poets Society.
You know, I'm going to throw a Shel Silverstein out there just because he seemed like he was able to be a party animal, but also do things that, you know, spoke to children, you know, often, you know, doing things with the Playboy Mansion, but also kind of, a songwriter and that sort of thing. Do we even put Dr. Seuss even in there? You know, it's a cliche answer, but like, yes, he would be able to do it. I mean, do we go Maya Angelou too? Just
you're stealing my picks. All right. No, but go ahead.
Leonard Cohen. I don't know who
I maybe, yeah. I mean Bob Dylan is a choice. Leonard Cohen is a choice. Like Bob musicians too, poets right? too. You know, like KRS-One could be a choice. Like remember, you expanded your universe.
Let's put Master Ace and Eminem, Aesop Rock. Throwing all my like I don't know. You get me started, then I get Weird Al coming into the place. I would just try to think of also, you know, somebody maybe that the poets I admire, I got to be in the room with them, but somebody that would like actively come from Hook.
Dante Basco?
Basco, yeah. He was one of the starters of Da Poetry Lounge in L.A. Had a great, I had frequented that once or twice. But, you know, you had a lot of luminaries. I can't choose three. I want a roving attendance of new voices. New voices that come, but some of the classics that I had mentioned, you know, Edward Gorey as well.
I can't imagine what poor Yarden has to go through to watch a Netflix show with you. But I'll do three. Okay. You know what? You took Maya Angelou. Damn it. All right. So I think I would really love to have just Lewis Carroll, I think would be fun. Nice. To somebody like who would be super fun to have, which Lawa Szymborska definitely would be there for me, just because she's so knowledgeable and she was so subtle and she seemed so cool in her interviews. And then the third one may surprise you, and it might be a little bit of I might be cheating a little bit, but because he had poetry in his first book that he didn't revisit, Hemingway, right? Because I think we would just party. Right. And that at least would be my inaugural class for the Dead Poets Society. Just again, high level, because I think they'd be fun. It's like planning a dinner party. Which poets would interact great with each other or be interesting to see how they'd interact to form that? That's where my mind was.
Well, we talked about, you know, gender. What's your feelings on a poetry event where alcohol is served versus one where it is not? Do you feel
no issue with it? Because I think you also have the freedom to choose how much you want to imbibe, right?
You do, but not every performer does or audience member.
I think that if I have a Dead Poets Society and Hemingway is there, and it's not young Hemingway who wrote those poems, it's older Hemingway who has the alcohol problem, I may bring some lemonade for him. Because I don't want to contribute to his, I don't want to contribute to his downfall, right?
Yeah, I mean, you can't control how somebody, in what state somebody arrives at your event. I've been a part of so many that, you know, well, starting it with people that were sober, and it just not just being a part of the vibe, but also been at events that it has. Something that, like, the slams, you know, all have bars and stuff like that. And, it, you know, it can be a great social lubricant and that sort of stuff. But the thing that bothered me somewhat is the blender. Performing at a event that where they're making smoothies and they're blending in mid-home. And that's happened.
It's hard to perform at a bar, dude. Like, I know it's not easy. I'm proud of myself that I've been able to do it and engage people in it. But when people are out there drinking and having fun, and you have somebody that's like, and today I would like to read this, it's they're gonna crash and burn. But I would follow the rules I would have at any gathering at my house, at any social gathering. Please respect, you know, don't go on a bender in my bathroom, but feel free to enjoy yourself. I'm going to read one more question before the lightning round instead of two, just to be conscious of time. So there is a line, right? What would your contribution to the powerful play be? So I'm curious, out of your poems, and I know you hate choosing one, which one poem would you want to leave behind as your contribution to the powerful play?
Okay. If you've got one up in the queue, I got to think of...
Sure, I'll start, because I know I blindsided you with this. For me, it would be one I wrote recently. It would be Ars Poetica, just because it was this culmination of everything I've been thinking about poetry recently. You know that I've been struggling with when I've been doing all of these classic forms, and when I reached, I was building momentum, and then I hit Ars Poetica and I paused for like a month because I'm like, what do I have to say that's original? What do I have to say that, you know, all the anxiety hit. And then I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to say what I have to say. And I put it all out into that poem. And as of right now, that I think would be my contribution, not because I think it's the best poem I've written or commercial poem. Like, that's not how I'm measuring that. It's just, it encapsulates everything or most of the things I want to say about poetry as of 2 months ago, 3 months ago.
Oof. Yeah, yeah. I mean, what was the first poem you wrote, just real quick? Or is that another question?
Oh, God, I don't remember. I couldn't find it. I think it was called What Would Happen If I Kiss You? And it was a Shakespeare ripoff, complete Shakespeare ripoff.
I'm sure.
Take that trespass so sweetly urged, right? Something like that. Not as blatant with the plagiarism, but something like that.
Yeah. No, all my first sonnets, I literally took the first line of the sonnets and then just wrote my own poem. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. You know, like, I mean, shall I compare thee to a summer's day? No, you know, that's already been done once before, you know, and then I talked about a spring day or something. Something that I would like to, you know, leave a little bit behind, that really puts all of my stuff in. I mean, performance-wise, something that I'm, I guess, proud of is that one I wrote for my dad, you know, the one about Parkinson's, that it was something I was trying to write, but that's one that, getting back to our previous discussion, that there's lots of wordplay, there's lots of pop culture references in it, but and there's a controlling metaphor as well of it all relating to a car. And you're still able to follow kind of that emotional through line throughout it. It takes, you know, like elements that I've included in a lot of my other poems, but this one, I feel like I was able to layer them all together. We're talking here about, you know, real poets on film. I would want to leave behind a video of me performing that. Along with the text, as opposed to just somebody reading it, because in that you're able to see all the years of work, you know, and different levels, like the theater, the comedy, the hip hop elements of it. So that's an interesting thing too, the medium, you know. As far as something on the page, maybe the Everything Bagel, something that where I try to tackle everything in a piece. So yeah, good question. Okay. Good question, sir.
All right. Here's the lightning round. You ready?
Let's do it.
What's the first poem you've ever loved?
The Homework Machine by Shel Silverstein.
I'm sure it was The Cat in the Hat, but the first poem I remember loving was inside Romeo and Juliet, the sonnet where it's palm to palm is Holy Palmer's Kiss.
Ah, yes.
Right. I love that poem. And yeah. I remember when I saw Shakespeare, to bring it to film, when I saw it in mm-hmm. Shakespeare in Love and they did the dance to that sonnet. It was beautiful. So
anything from Romeo and Juliet. There's the first poem that I loved, but the first love poem that I've loved is a different question, or the first poem that made me love, you know, like
you're going deep. That it was the first one for me, but tell me yours.
I mean, like that love, you know, probably was one of the Shakespeare sonnets. Let me not to the marriage of two minds amid impediments, but yeah, the idea of two people, you know, having just separate views, you know, and being able to come together. That's even something that I wrote, the first poem that I wrote about my mom, that the first one that I wrote, that I was like, wow, this is about her dying. And I didn't look at it as a grief poem. I looked at it, wow, I feel better now about this, that I had written it. I love that piece.
It's funny because I'm thinking, and I know it's a lightning round, so I'll get to it, but I'm thinking about like palm to palm is Holy Palmer's Kiss. And I'm in my work, there's such a preoccupation within love and the divine and the secular and the earth, and then like prayer is love, right? So it's dancing is prayer. Dancing is a call to the divine. So I can just having this conversation makes me more clearly see who I am now. All right. Number two.
How every piece has finds its way into your work. Okay.
Well, we're made up of all the little pieces of everything and everyone we've ever loved, right? So that's who we become. Right. Number two, dead or alive, one poet you'd resurrect to have dinner with.
If they're alive, I wouldn't have to resurrect or still That's resurrect right. them.
It was, I mean,
I'm nitpicking.
I know. Dead or alive, one poet you resurrect or invite to have dinner with.
Dinner party poet. Let's go with Burroughs.
Oh.
Just maybe it would be a little bit of an absurd time, but I'd like to kind of find my way, see if I could find my way through his hallucinogenic brain, you know?
For me, I think Bukowski would be a fantastic dinner guest, somebody who'd be like holding court. I guess my joke answer would be Willie Shakes, man, because A, I want to make sure that he is the one who wrote all that stuff. I would confirm it there. And number two, I'm curious about what Peruvian food and modern spice would do to his barred tongue. Yeah. You know, if it would blow his mind.
Yeah, that'd be right. fun. Yeah, introducing them to modern cuisine.
That's right. Favorite quote from Dead Poets Society.
I had mentioned it before with the prison line. I can't quote it now.
Okay. Mine, I mean, there's so many, right? I love the "we don't read and write poetry because it's cute" quote and that whole thing. We read and write poetry because we are members of the human race, and the human race is filled with passion. But I think the one that's more emblemic for me is, no matter what anybody tells you, words and ideas can change the world. That one's the one that impacted me the most, because I can be melancholic. I don't think I'm pessimistic, because I get up every day and move forward and try things, right? I think that my therapist told me that makes me an optimist. But it's just such a beautiful thought, like, go, try. You don't have to use your fist. You don't have to use monopolization of resources. You can, words and ideas can change the world. And that is one that has impacted me to this day.
Yeah.
But I love the other one that I was mentioning, you know? Or like women are like a cathedral, go worship them, or other lines like that throughout the movie that are great, you know.
Sweaty Tooth Madman.
Sweaty Tooth Madman is a fun one.
I guess, you know, I like strive to find your own voice as well. You know, that's so important. Whether it's the longer you wait to begin, the less likely you are to find it at all is striking, of, you know, finding your voice, but how so many people move further from their dreams or from who they are, not to say it's never too late to find, you know, what it is that your lifeblood is, but like, just imagine all the things that you layer, you push on top of it that might either that push that voice down as opposed to lift that up, and having to, you know, like, yeah, like, what are you excavating to do that? You know, some might say a great artist to find their voice needs to have all that shit pressed down upon them so that they can, you know, lift it up, and their voice comes from the pushing all the factors that have repressed that voice. But then you have the artists that start from the everything fuels what that voice is. So every experience that you have from the moment that you experience something are filtering into your voice. And I think, you know, there's no wrong way to go about that, but okay. It's a cool way to think about it.
All right. Number four, carpe diem or stay in bed.
I really like to dream about pieces before getting up. There is something about staying in bed for me. The moment before waking up that launches me up into, all right, oh, wow. I want to write today. I got this idea that I've dreamt about or I've thought about in the moments before waking. Then I seize the day. So kind of both.
Carpe diem. I'm up at 5 a.m. I'm at the gym. I'm writing. I'm walking. How many times have you called me and I'm just taking a walk or hiking or something, right?
Right, right.
Carpe
right.
diem. Pen and paper or phone notes?
Right. Having been in New York, it was so much phone where riding the subway, I wrote so much. When I first started out, I was writing when I was a waiter at the Olive Garden. It was a lot of pen and paper where it was kind of writing on the checkbook for the... Now, when I really have something to say, or I felt like I've lost touch with what I want to say, I always go back to the pen and paper and something will come of it. Notes, you know, are well, I already have kind of something that I'm building.
Okay.
You have a preferred?
When I'm feeling vintage, I use pen and paper, but I really write more on phone notes because the phone is always on me as I'm traveling as well. I've lost notebooks, which destroyed me. At least with the phone, it goes up to the cloud. I love when I can be at home and I'm or go to the lake. I love writing in pen and paper, but then I eventually transfer it to the phone so I can just upload it and have it ready for if I'm prepping a book or for publication. So I would right. I like the idea of pen and paper, of me saying pen and paper, but if I'm honest, I have to say phone notes.
I mean, for me, sonnets have come out of the phone a little bit too, being obsessed with that because the shorter lines, like they have to be that. There's something too about the Google Doc. I like to see the keyboard as I write because I like to see the letters. If I don't have that on a pen and paper, I write the alphabet on every page too. So, but seeing the letters, the characters is as much as part of the writing process as thinking of the ideas. Yeah.
What is the most rebellious thing you've ever written about? Maybe the stuff I write about toxic masculinity or like generational toxicity or generational abuse. I do believe society has placed a value on that commodification of masculinity. And I think it's important for somebody. I really never thought of myself as masculine. And I don't mean that in any other way than that. It's just, it's not something that I thought of myself like an Arnold or whatever. But the feedback I've gotten from many women in my life is that I am extremely masculine. I'm also nurturing. And I'm like, oh, masculine, but nurturing. No, should be masculine and nurturing, right? You can be all of these things. So when I write against these patriarchal tenets that exist, that I feel that are there to control how we behave, which prevents us from being advocates and allies to other marginalized groups. That's what I, when I write against that, I think that's probably what the most rebellious thing I write.
You know what's interesting? I come across as far more like bro-y or masculine within the poetry community, but within a, I guess, more masculine, I am completely, in the opposite, like in amongst a sports team, I am the creative, just only the creative artist, like the different cat. So within that, in the same ways, like there's some poets that are looked upon as, oh, they're more comedians than poets, or right. These people are more poets than stand-ups, you know, not everybody gets to see your wholeness, you know?
Yeah. And I think masculinity could be a beautiful thing because masculinity has so often been associated with aggression when it doesn't have to be. Poetry in the classroom, revolutionary or corny?
performance poetry, all yeah, revolutionary. If you're bringing in hip hop, you're bringing in theater, you're bringing in,
you know what, I think voices. Keating would bring in hip hop. I think Keating would bring in hip hop. I don't know why I didn't say that earlier, completely. But yes,
completely.
And I agree, revolutionary as hail. Your poet crush.
My poet crush.
We are. This is just an intellectual exercise, ladies and gentlemen. He is a happily married man, and I'm happily in a relationship. So
my wife can be very poetic in her phrasing of things. I will say,
yes.
And I will say there are many poets that I have dated though in the past during my collegiate days. That yeah, there was a way that we looked at the world similarly through language, but I don't think we were as aligned as people. I'm not gonna name all these names right now.
I think you took this question differently than what I meant, so I'll go first. Emily Dickinson.
Oh, you're saying of
yes, Emily, yes. Emily Dickinson, right? I love, like, she has such an unconventional style, like the short lines, the use of dashes. I have a poem here that shows how she can get a little frisky, right? So it's called The Outlet, and it says, "My river runs to thee, blue sea, wilt welcome me? My river waits reply, O sea, look graciously. I'll fetch thee brooks from spotted nooks. Say, see, take me." Emily Dickinson.
Yes.
My poet crush. With that reframing, do you have one, or we can move on to the next?
Well, I believe that leads us into our next episode, which is going to be about the E-Dick.
Correct. Nobody has gotten in trouble more than the E-Dick. best. What is the
Wait,
best
I'm
movie?
Saying, isn't that the next movie we're doing?
Yes. A Quiet... Yeah.
A Quiet Passion.
A Quiet Passion. That is the next movie. Spoiler. Best movie about poetry besides Dead Poets Society.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Slam for me was the pinnacle of when I saw it. But, you know, let's put Jodorowsky in there just because.
Anything he's done, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. For me, I think as a movie, well, first of all, I think this is an exercise to try to find it. Right. We're watching movies that we've loved or that the other hasn't watched or we both haven't watched that we've been curious about. So I don't know. But as of right now, for me, as a movie, I love Il Postino so much. I love this. I love the music. I love the direction. I love the performances. Maybe that one, which is in such a, I don't want to say direct opposition, but it's such a different film than Neruda, which is also about Pablo Neruda. Right. So, yeah, that one for me. And then finally, thank you, Scott, for indulging me with this lightning round that was more of a molasses round. But one word to describe poetry's role in your life.
All-encompassing. There's a dash in between there.
I will use the same word that I ended Ars Poetica to bring it full circle. Necessary. It's necessary. I don't know where I would be without poetry. You know, good friends like you that I've met through it, women that I've been involved with, because of that through my life, that have made me a better person. The connections that I've built with my family, with my friends, the way that I hope all of, I think poetry also helps me be a better partner to my girlfriend, which I really want to be. You know, I really want to be a great partner for her. So for me, it's necessary.
Necessary. I love it. And when I say all encompassing, I mean AWL dash encompassing, as in a tool that kind of pierces, you know, like in your heart, and encompassing, you know, having to do with compasses, because it gives me direction and like points me to the north, south, east, and west. I wouldn't be able to navigate the world without it.
And now you guys see what I meant about the Spaghettisburg Address. Brother, this was fun. We need to do more of these refrains. We definitely had a lot more to say about Dead Poets Society. Thank you guys for listening in. These are the real poets. I'm Renzo del Castillo. That has been Scott
Raven.
And we'll see you next time.
Real Poets is produced and hosted by Renzo del Castillo and Scott Raven. Original music composed by Gabby Weitzenfeld. Episode art and visuals by the Real Poets team. New episodes come out every other Thursday. Hit subscribe, download the episode, and leave a review to help us grow. This has been a Real Poets production. And remember to always keep it real.